AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The food system is in the spotlight on AgriTalk this morning. USDA is talking about transforming the food system, and a House subcommittee report on meat packers and worker safety during the early days of the pandemic. Yeah, it's likely to put the packing industry on notice.
Live from a persistent packer's pickle via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Ashley Johnson from the Russell Group. Then we'll chat with Jessica Coulterman from Lincoln Premium Poultry. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Beautiful day here in Northeast Iowa, isn't it?
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe a little cool. I mean, I shouldn't complain, though, should I?
No, I don't think you should.
Here I am complaining that it's a little cool. I'm sorry. But, hey, I'd rather get a few more growing degree units generated
GDUs,
out there.
Right?
GDUs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. GDDs. I'm not saying that it's not good. I'm just saying that it could be better.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with hoping or wishing for better, is there?
A little better is, in fact, a little better.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly right. Welcome. Glad that you are with us here this morning. We are going to talk about USDA's plans that go back, I believe, to June of last year. Remember when they started talking about the more vigorous enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act?
Yes. Yes.
When they started talking about increasing competition that would help create a better food system for the U.S., well, they're putting some money behind it and putting some plans in place now. And Secretary Vilsack talked about it yesterday. He's out talking about it again today and on the road. And Ashley Johnson there at the Russell Group has been keeping tabs of exactly what is going on with these plans to transform the food system. We're going to get the details from Ashley here in just a bit.
Is throwing money at the problem always the solution? My dog had an accident the other day, and I threw a couple of quarters at him, and it didn't help. It didn't help.
Well, it's because it was a couple of quarters. Now you throw a couple billion at that problem.
Now we got a solution?
Now you got a solution.
Oh, I feel
better. That's right.
I feel good.
All right.
In today's news, President Biden warned there is little the administration can do in the short term to lower high energy and food prices. Biden said instead of direct action to bring down gasoline or food prices, he is looking to ease the financial burden in other areas like prescription drugs and child care. Biden is reportedly considering other proposals, such as trying to set a lower price for the sale of Russian crude. Meanwhile, House Republicans are planning to unveil a six-part strategy today aimed at lowering gasoline prices and addressing climate change.
Good, good. I'm glad that they are coming with some specifics on a plan rather than just saying the administration isn't doing enough. That's been the line the whole time. Come with some ideas, some solutions on how to fix the problems.
Well, Chip, a report from the Financial Times overnight suggested that Saudi Arabia told the West it was prepared to raise oil production if Russia's output falls substantially under the weight of sanctions. Another report from the Wall Street Journal on Tuesday outlined that OPEC Plus could suspend Russia from a supply deal due to economic fallout from the invasion of Ukraine and its ability to pump more crude. Last month, the North American Electricity Reliability Corporation, a nonprofit electrical grid watchdog, issued a new report warning that two-thirds of the United States face a heightened risk of power outages this summer. Part of the problem is reportedly adverse weather conditions, although the Washington Examiner writes, quote, government regulations and taxes designed to reduce carbon emissions have also caused a huge loss in generating capacity from power plants reliant on fossil fuels, Chip.
Oh, well, I'm glad that that is at least acknowledged.
Let's get that out there, yeah.
Yeah, that the administration policies are having an impact on the ability to produce energy.
Well, the Biden administration is awarding millions of dollars to expand and improve the nation's rail tracks to reduce freight congestion and speed up the supply chain as shippers decry what they see as poor service. A Kremlin spokesman accused the United States of escalating Russia's war with Ukraine, raising the threat not only of increased fighting in the country, but potentially spreading it beyond Ukraine's borders, saying, quote, the U.S. is deliberately and diligently pouring oil on the fire, commenting on the U.S. decision to provide U.S.-made rocket systems.
Yeah, that's going to be... It seems like Putin is starting to play the role of a victim in some of the Russian comments from the Kremlin, and that just means that he's going to be easily provoked going forward.
Yep. Well, a foreign ministry spokesman said Ukraine is working with international partners to create a United Nations-backed mission to restore Black Sea shipping routes and export Ukrainian ag products. And finally, major restrictions on outdoor water use have gone into effect for Southern Californians as the state attempts to conserve water. Declining reservoir levels and reduced snowpack have led to a severe three-year drought, and officials fear that some communities will not even have enough water to get through the summer, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's go to Greg Henderson, editorial director there at Drovers. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chip.
Okay, so we've been really focused as an industry on putting black hides on cattle. Is that black hide worth the premium?
You know, absolutely. The Angus Association and the Certified Angus Beef have done a phenomenal job, Chip, for 30 years. When we go to steakhouse, a lot of time we think about a black Angus when we buy a steak. But now we have a new survey from some breeds that are not necessarily black. Specifically, Red Angus has commissioned a study asking cattle feeders, would you like to see feeder cattle market become more objective in its pricing methods? And overwhelmingly, they say it has to change. 95% agree hide color significantly affects feeder cattle price, but only 75 of those respondents said black-hided feeder cattle are not necessarily superior. Basically, what they were saying is we need to look at the genetics and the package rather than just the hide color. This has been a conversation, Chip, as you know, for many years. And the Red Angus specifically, Charolais, other breeds, Simmental, Gelvie, you know, I'm leaving one out here probably, but those breeds have focused on genetics for a better quality steak, and now they want to get recognized for it.
Right. Right. Well, I don't recall eating many hides, dude.
No, absolutely. You know, what Red Angus is saying is a black hide right now presents the possibility of extra grid dollars, and they think they're being discriminated against. And I think cattle feeders are saying that too.
Right. Very good. Very good. All right. It will be interesting to see how this might develop and change things up going forward, Greg. We need to stay on top of it. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, we're talking transforming the food system next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AltoSid IGR, an easy-to-use feed-through IGR to control horn fly populations. AltoSid IGR delivers consistent results that show.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Lazy yellow moon coming up tonight. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. Davis, we were talking earlier about USDA's framework to transition or transform the nation's food system. They're putting some dollars behind it. They're putting some plans behind it, and we're going to find out about some of the details from Ashley Johnson. Ashley is the principal at the Russell Group in Washington, D.C. Randy is obviously a friend of the show and is on whenever he can be. But Ashley is a veteran of farm policy in D.C. She served on the Senate Ag Committee under Senator Lincoln, and joined the Obama administration in 2011. She held multiple leadership positions at USDA, including the White House liaison, chief of staff to the deputy secretary, and was also a policy assistant covering rural affairs and immigration issues for the White House Domestic Policy Council. Ashley, welcome to AgriTalk. I'm glad you're here.
Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad that you are. Okay. The USDA's framework to transition the nation's food system, it's a $2 billion package. Let's get into some of the details of it. You were at Georgetown University yesterday, I believe, when Secretary Vilsack was speaking. What were some of the main takeaways that you had?
So yes, I was. I attended the event yesterday. And you are correct. It is about a $2 billion program. Some of the funding has already previously been rolled out. I think this framework is about transforming food systems, but it's more adding on to the commitments that this administration and USDA have already made and are continuing to kind of roll out new programs and strategies to continue their efforts on how to strengthen the food supply chain. Mm-hmm. So, there were some big buckets. There were some, repeats of some of the existing programs that have either been already funded or applications are currently being reviewed. So you have the loan guarantee program that was re-highlighted yesterday. The secretary talked through the meat and poultry expansion program, for which, in the first round of funding, they are targeting to release about $150 million. They received over 200 applications for that, requesting upwards of $800 million. So I know that's going to be a pretty lengthy process for review and an award. You also have some kind of new investments in the production space around organics and around urban agriculture. Also, some new money focused on workforce training, some technical assistance, and food safety certification programs for specialty crops, so fruits and vegetables. I think one of the most interesting things that I heard yesterday during the secretary, not only during his speech, but kind of even during his dialogue, because there was a small panel after, he kind of walked through the announcement, talking to some folks across the countryside and just hearing firsthand what they're experiencing on the ground. But, here, Chip, one of the things that is interesting is that there's going to be about $600 million that's going to flow into the same, kind of you know, target of strengthening the food supply chain, but it's not going to be focused on meat and poultry. It's going to be, you know, focused like further within the supply chain. So, you know, strengthening businesses, you know, we saw so many breakdowns and kind of how we take for granted how things have always worked in the previous 2 years with the pandemic. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they structure that funding, what eligibility looks like, whether it's burdensome for small businesses or small processors to navigate that program in order to be able to access those resources, I think is going to be something to watch.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. It was good to see, like you said, they did talk about some of the issues that were raised, you know, basically, well, it was a little more than a year ago now. I believe it was in March of 2021. But one of the things that they continue to talk about is a $600 million in aid to support infrastructure for things like cold storage facilities. Yeah. The disruption that we had in meatpacking early on in the pandemic, it exposed a lot of the vulnerabilities. And I think some of this money is going to be used to remove some of the vulnerabilities that are in the meatpacking industry, right?
Yes. And you know, and it's still the same framework around, you know, so it's more than cold storage, you know, it's broader, more broader for processing facilities of every model. But I think what they're doing is taking kind of what they developed for meat and poultry and modifying it for, you know, independently owned operations and businesses for infrastructure purposes. So cold storage, refrigerated trucks, even processing facilities for distribution and storage and aggregation. I think there was a big focus on distribution and aggregation and kind of what that looks like, which also I think Chip leads into kind of, you know, it's still going into, you know, equipment costs, lack of competition, limited supply chain and kind of, you know, how to add value. That also goes into one of the other pieces of the announcement yesterday, which was about the development of kind of these local regional food, food systems. And kind of, you know, what that looks like. You know, there was a lot of talk, not just from the secretary, but Undersecretary Moffitt also joined the secretary yesterday during that, during this conversation, to talk about how some of the programs are, you know, can sometimes be disjointed, and, you know, where they're are resources that exist, sometimes there is a lack of knowledge or a lack of being able to share it broadly so the folks who need it the most can actually tap into it. And I think, you know, this $400 million that's going to go into the creation of these kind of local and regional, you know, food business centers, I think is what it's being called, to help with kind of aggregation and distribution, but to also kind of help with that infrastructure network that you just mentioned and help people be able to tap into that. You know, I would say, you know, just, you know, being, you know, looking in from the outside, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the coordination of that works. There are several other state, you know, offices represented by USDA already existing within states, from FSA to RD. Some of which, you know, could also have some, you know, some buy-in into these programs. And so it's going to be interesting to see, one, how the coordination works, two, you know, if they're, you know, how effective the outreach plans are and how fast or quickly they're able to get them operationalized to measure how effective they can be.
Gotcha. Okay. This has got to be a thrill for the Secretary Vilsack, because you go back to his first term under Obama, and I mean the very early days, he was very focused on localizing food sources. He was very much into the farmers markets. This is kind of coming full circle with hundreds of millions of dollars of support now to help localize a food source.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, the secretary, you know, did close, you know, I think with a very, you know, kind of personal moment. And I will tell you that the phrase full circle did come up more than once yesterday during that conversation. Yes. And, you know, and not just from the secretary, but from some of the panelists, right, that were also, you know, coming, you know, live from their distribution centers, right, live from, you know, where they're processing and running their business every day, you know, in the communities where they're they're growing their families, you know, and just talking about how important this is, but also how this is the connector, right? You know, so, you know, we have so many issues that are, you know, partisan and things that divide us, but how, you know, this is the connector. Yep. And really, you know, there was also a big focus on like nutrition and kind of just like the sustainability of our like nutrition infrastructure systems and kind of the money that's going to go in to that for, you know, the healthy financing initiative for, you know, kind of targeting food waste and so forth, and how to impact, you know, how those nutrition concepts, those policy concepts can help impact kind of health outcomes, right? Which is something that we're always focused on, especially, you know, if you're a person from me who's from, you know, really small town, rural America. I tell people I'm from Village, Arkansas, which is just population, my family. And so these are things that really matter in small towns and areas like where I'm from. And so, yes, sir, I will tell you that phrase full circle moment in relation to creating these strengthening and building upon these kind of local and regional food distribution centers was referenced more than one time yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've always wondered exactly why Secretary Vilsack came back under Biden. And it's not 2.0, it's actually 3.0, because it is his third term as USDA secretary. And the idea that he always had some unfinished business was part of the reasoning that we kind of saw. And this is part of that unfinished business. He is going to, I believe, pursue this very aggressively going forward. Ashley, it's been a joy getting to know you here a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I hope to talk with you again soon. That is Ashley Johnson from the Russell Group in Washington, D.C. We're going out to Lincoln Premium Poultry next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. Man, this bean market is really working hard to get back Tuesday's big losses that we saw, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And really broad-based buying across the soy complex. The meal market's lagging a little bit, but soy oil is sprinting to the upside. You know, palm oil was firmer overnight, and that's lending some support there. Soybeans, you know, picking up on the buyer interest, and we had new export sales again this morning, so second day in a row. China yesterday, Pakistan today, some export demand news supporting the market there.
Okay, very good. Wheat seems to be willing to move to the upside with beans.
Yeah, winter wheat markets, strong gains there. That's, you know, but that's coming on the heels of sharp losses yesterday. And so some corrective trade going on there. But the winter wheat markets definitely leading that complex higher, with spring wheat showing much lesser gains. You know, and then everything is spilling over into the corn market. And buyer interest has been limited in corn, but starting to pick up a little bit here mid-morning.
Very good. Very good. Some nice follow through to the upside in the hog market.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, good strong gains yesterday, and like you mentioned, some follow through. And really, I think that just seasonally, we continue to see prices start to build. It took a while for that seasonal rally to get going, but now that it has, buyers are definitely interested. And speaking of follow through, cattle market, good strong gains yesterday, and, you know, active follow through this morning. So that market is starting to pick up with the flip of the calendar here to June.
Right, right. Yeah, that hog market has shown us some higher highs and higher lows, so that's a good trend. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. I'm Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us. Interesting conversation with Ashley Johnson there about the transformation. And this has been a long time in the making for Secretary Vilsack. It is something that, honestly, in the early days of Vilsack at USDA, I was very critical. Jim Wiesmeyer was very critical of his lack of attention on production agriculture and his seemingly laser focus on localizing food sources and farmers markets and how it was the answer to, in the future going forward. He's struck a more balanced approach here as in, and he was very production agriculture oriented late in his second term, and here in his third term, he's got a balanced approach to it, and it's going to be interesting to see how he tries to advance that going forward. Okay, let's go out to Lincoln, Nebraska. Lincoln Premium Poultry. Jessica Coulterman is with us right now. Jessica, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm great. Always great to talk to you. Actually, we're in Fremont, Nebraska.
Fremont.
I always have to say that. Yep, name of our company is Lincoln, but we're in Fremont. So shout out to our home community here.
Excellent. I'm glad that you corrected that, Jessica. That's very important. Because that's one of the things that I want to talk about. And Lincoln Premium Poultry is, well, explain to the listeners what Lincoln Premium Poultry is.
We are Costco's poultry plant, poultry company. So basically, we are owned, we're a wholly owned subsidiary of Costco. And we operate here in Nebraska with local growers, a few of them from over in Iowa as well. And the chicken comes into this facility. We process it, package it, and it goes to Costco stores around the United States. We are one of their main suppliers. They do have other suppliers, but we are the only one that is a wholly owned and operated company under Costco.
Right. And the goal there at Lincoln Premium is that perfect bird that goes on the rotisserie, right?
Yes, that is a very large part of our operation. So when you go in and you buy your $4.99 rotisserie chicken, which has been $4.99 for as long as I can remember, that bird is a very exciting product in the Costco warehouses. People come in specifically for that product. And we make a very strong effort here to make sure that all the stores that need it have that chicken when they need it.
Right. And even not every bird can be that perfect bird for the rotisserie. And those birds are used in other Costco poultry offerings, right?
Yes. So if the bird is not that perfect bird for the rotisserie, it does get cut up and sold as fresh chicken in a saddle pack. So we have breasts, tenders, wings, drumsticks, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Full product offering. Full product offering out of Lincoln Premium. Absolutely. Okay. We have talked about what Lincoln Premium was doing at the time of the pandemic to protect worker safety. And we've documented that some with you, Jessica, over the last couple of years. But then we get this, what is being called an exhaustive investigation conducted by the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis. It's a 59-page report titled, How the Trump Administration Helped the Meatpacking Industry Block Pandemic Worker protections. I'm not going to ask you to comment directly on that report, Jessica, but the report uses a very broad brush. It makes it sound like all meat processing facilities were bad actors during the time of the pandemic, basically did nothing to prevent the spread of COVID among the workers. And in fact, it comes right out and says that the meat packers put profits ahead of worker safety and health. If that was the case at Lincoln Premium, I don't think you'd be welcome in Fremont, Nebraska anymore, Jessica.
No, I agree. I mean, I can only tell you what we did here, and I'll be really honest with you. I'm very, very proud of what we've done because I think we were a model in the industry. We actually helped the University of Nebraska Medical Center by showing them what we were doing. We contributed to things that they added to their food processing playbook that then went out to food processing facilities all over the United States as, you know, a best practices guide of how to do this and do it well. We did all the things that you saw were recommended, right? We did the protocols, the barriers, the social distancing, the mask, the hand sanitizer. But that's not what I'm the most proud of. What I'm most proud of is the above and beyond efforts. You know, for example, if you were age 65 or older in our company, or if you had a known medical condition, we allowed you up to 12 weeks with pay to quarantine at the beginning of the pandemic in an effort to give us that time, knowing our most vulnerable were protected, give us that time to make sure we had everything within these facilities, top notch, buttoned down, everything we could possibly do had been done. When the food supplies were weak, we just gave chicken to our team members. When they needed toilet paper, we asked Costco to hold back pallets so our people could go in before, you know, their open hours and purchase what they needed. We partnered with the local school system, not only to make sure that our families who had children at home were getting the materials they needed for those kids to keep learning, but also to help this local school district put in their own COVID programs so they could get those kids back in the classroom that next year. When someone on our team got COVID, we followed up with them, if not daily, then every other day to say, how are you doing? What are your symptoms? How can we help? What do you need? And if they did need medicine or they needed groceries, we took them those groceries.
Yeah.
Our people appreciated it after, you know, we kind of got through these many waves. You know, I do town halls regularly and I ask, you know, what are we doing well? What can we do better? And people just said, you know, thank you. Thank you for caring about us, for checking on me, for bringing me the groceries, for supporting us through this as part of this team. There's a really great leader here in Nebraska who passed away in the last year. His name was Phil Raimondo. He was the chairman and CEO of Bailey Manufacturing. And I had talked to him talking about what we were doing and sharing ideas that they could use in their manufacturing company. And he said to me, he said, this is a Nebraska success story. And that was probably one of the best compliments I've ever received. That, you know, we had done something that shone kind of brightly in the midst of a really ugly time.
Right. Right. Jessica, the subcommittee, the House subcommittee on the coronavirus crisis, did they come to you looking to investigate how you worked with the workers to protect their health?
No, we've never talked to anybody from the subcommittee. We have shown, you know, we've told this story broadly, and all of our congressional delegation knows, you know, because we've shared with them what we've done. But no one from the subcommittee ever talked to us.
Gotcha. How has that COVID experience? I mean, it's permanently changed how you do business, right?
Well, I think it's permanently changed how everyone in America does business, especially in manufacturing. Our goal with this company was to be, you know, the best. And we always wanted our team members to feel valued, respected, and that they are part of something here. Like, this is their, not just where they go to work, but this is their work home. This is their work family. And I think that COVID in some ways gave us an opportunity to show them that we meant that. Because if you recall, we started our company in operations in September of 2019. We started our second shift a week before the world shut down. And so this was our opportunity to say, we're not only telling that story, walking, you know, we're going to walk the walk. We're not just talking the talk. You know, when we say you are a member of the LPP family, that means that when you do get sick, I'm going to call you and check on you. Or if you need groceries, I'm going to get in my car and drive them to your house personally to make sure that you're taken care of. And so, you know, in all crisis, there's learning, there's silver linings. I think for us, it gave us the opportunity to show we meant what we said and wanting to support our people. But I also think it helped other companies see that that's a model that works.
Yeah.
And that, you know, workers need to feel like they belong. They need to feel valued. They need to feel respected. And you been our goal to do that, to show that.
Jessica, you were writing the playbook for how to handle a situation like this without even realizing that you were writing the playbook.
Right. You know, my parents had a very small insurance company. They had 5 employees. That was the most I think they had at any given time. And when I was growing up, those people, you know, they were like part of our family. And so when I was put in the role here to help create that culture, I just didn't know any other way. That's what I knew. And so, you know, we tried to implement a model where we treated everybody that way, as like they were part of the family from the beginning. Yeah. It's a little harder with 1,200 people. I won't lie. Like, it's not easy to do, but if you can do it successfully, I think it's a great model for business in America.
Jessica, thank you for helping us understand that even though this subcommittee report is using a broad brush, there are fine examples out there of how to do it. Jessica, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Nice to be with you.
All right, Jessica Coulterman, Lincoln Premium Poultry. Davis and I will be right back.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Good morning. How are you today? I think I speak for both Chip and myself. And my handsome news dog, Blaze. We hope you're doing well. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. AgriTalk. We're here for you. Chip, you know, I like to look for themes in these shows, whether they're actually there or not, by design or by just happy serendipitous accident. This one's kind of indirect, but also not. Sort of that hometown feel.
Okay.
Ashley Johnson talked about, I believe she said she's from a town in Arkansas, population, her family.
Made me
small
laugh.
Small town in Arkansas. And then we spoke with Ashley Johnson from the Russell Group, Jessica Coulterman from Lincoln Premium Poultry, about the lengths that their company went to ensure their workers' experience with COVID was as non-disruptive to the workers' lives as possible, to give them assistance and such. And you sort of made the comment, if you hadn't have taken care of these, or if you had done certain things, well, the town probably wouldn't be all that welcome there where you're located.
Fremont, Nebraska anymore.
Fremont, Nebraska, would no longer welcome you. And a lot of what she was talking about was not only if you get sick, we're going to help you out in this way, this way, this way. Mm-hmm. But there's also the concern over worker safety.
Sure.
There's a select subcommittee investigation that I feel like we need to talk about there, and it seems very pertinent
Absolutely.
Right now.
You bet. You bet. I want to get to some of the details and some of the conclusions. It's a 50.
Yeah.
It is a 59 page report. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But from page 32 to 59, it's all subnotes and references on where conclusions were pulled from. So it is very detailed. Some of the journalism professors at Iowa State might be really impressed with all the subnotes and everything on here, but the conclusion is really pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Meatpacking, this is from the report, okay? And again, I'm going to go ahead and give you the title of the report here. How the Trump administration helped the meatpacking industry block pandemic worker protections. And I guess I would call it a subtitle, except they put the mm-hmm. subtitle on top. It's in quotes, right on the cover of the report. You've got Mike Pence and Sonny Perdue looking down at some different cuts of pork and beef.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath it, in quotes, it says, now to get rid of those pesky health departments.
Ooh. Now, who put out this report? What?
The Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis in the House.
Okay.
I mean, it puts a bad taste in my mouth. That's no pun intended, talking mm-hmm. about the meat industry. But it puts a bad taste in my mouth right from the beginning with it. But in the conclusion, meatpacking companies knew the risk posed by the coronavirus to their workers and knew it wasn't a risk that the country needed them to take. They nonetheless lobbied aggressively, successfully enlisting USDA as a close collaborator in their efforts to keep workers on the job in unsafe conditions, to ensure state and local health authorities were powerless to mandate otherwise, and to be protected against legal liability for the harms that would result. The results of this lobbying campaign were tragic. During the first year of the pandemic, workforces for Smithfield, Tyson, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef alone saw at least 59,000 worker infections, at least 269 worker deaths, and countless more cases and deaths among meatpacking adjacent communities driven by plant outbreaks.
Hmm.
Now, they've got some suggestion here, and again, from the report, to prevent the recurrence of these harms, it is important that agencies work with each other and state governments to develop crisis plans that will guard against industry-captured agencies such as Trump's USDA exploiting their authority to advance private corporate interests at the expense of public health. The playbook for all of this was being written on the fly. That's one thing that this completely ignores. The other thing is that I see nowhere, and I haven't read every word of the report, but I've looked at it several times, and I'm not finding any reference to the production side of those animals
mm-hmm.
and the welfare of those animals
mm-hmm.
and the simple fact that these animals needed to be processed. They needed to be put through the system. Otherwise, as happened way too often,
yes,
they were just going to be euthanized and disposed of. And the simple fact that the processing side of the industry was able to stay up and functioning as much as it could and could work with producers as much as they could. I mean, it was an ugly time.
It was
an unbelievably ugly time, and it could have been worse, because I know that the conclusions here that they are going to put forward are that if something like this happens again, shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the recommendation. It's going to be a battle to fight.
Yes.
I don't think there's any question about that. All right, we have focused on the food system today and this afternoon.
Making me hungry.
When you come back at 206 Central, we are going to have a conversation with Chris Robinson, Robinson Ag Marketing, right here on AgriTalk. On my internet.